You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome along to the Between the Stripes LOI podcast mid-season review. It's Series A, Episode 17 of the show. And as ever, we're brought to you by our main sponsor, Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound, lighting and AV solutions. Delighted to say Shane Keegan, leading League of Ireland pundit and former manager of multiple clubs in the league. He's going to join us on the show tonight to talk about what has been the first half of the season. And my name's Kieran Burke, as you know, Gary Riley. Alongside me, I am your podcast host and now a former Longford Town player, whereas Gary is just Gary. How are you getting on, guys?
A former Longford Town player, is that it?
Longford Town legend.
Right.
Put it on the CV. Yeah. Get it on the CV.
Oh, yeah, Jesus, that CV yours is just ran full of shite.
Had me phone on standby here all day, just waiting for Grovesy to give me the buzz now for next week.
Right, I'd say we'd be better off closing the club down if if it came to that. I've no doubt about that, but missed last week, of course, with you being away and stuff. So good to get the review going this week.
Yeah, a bit later than we planned the review show, but as Gaz says, I was over in Portugal for the Ireland game. We won't talk about that. And then Longford Legends match at the weekend. For anyone that has no idea what I'm on about, but been a former Longford Town player, I togged out for 5 minutes for the town at the weekend. A 100% pass completion race, Gaz. I took the tip off, gave the ball to Sean Prunty, passed it backwards, found his feet. So also with the phone on standby here, I'm hoping Derry City, since they're so stats bound, that they'll give me the buzz as well at some stage.
Absolutely. Well, that's the only thing to look at, how many times you can pass it backwards. They did well there. Fair play to you.
Speaking of Derry, though, look, European draws today. Derry City and Shelburne getting very, very kind draws in the Conference League, which is great to see. We'll come to them in a second. Shamrock Rovers are going to be going back to Iceland once again. Is it going to be a similar outcome to last year?
What was the scores last year? They played a team that's lower down in the division last year, and they were well taken care of, weren't they?
They were Be the Black, wasn't it, last year or something along those lines? Absolutely tore them to pieces.
Yeah, I think if the league table's not to go by, not as if I consume that much Icelandic football. But I don't know. I think with the way Shamrock Rovers are playing, the players that they have out injured, the kind of bit of a one dimensional play that they have kind of incorporated into their game in the last little while has probably going to make their stay in the Champions League quite short. I don't think that we'd be too surprised about that, but I think the biggest issue is that I think it's still the same, where if they had won one go of the Champions League, they would have been guaranteed a playoff into the conference. So to have that would have been a huge boost going into the whole, you know, European run. But unfortunately, it's probably going to be a case that they're going to get knocked out early on, and that'll be the end of them probably.
If they lose this first game, they drop into the second round of the conference. You don't get that parachute into the Europa League. So that's a huge blow if you don't get over the first hurdle.
That's right. I was going to say, is it probably more comfortable for Shamrock Rovers to be in the Conference League? Can more success be, obviously more success can be got in the Conference League, and for the sake of prize money, it's very, very small difference. So probably the Conference League is the way to go, and, you know, try and maybe show up to some of the games like they didn't do the last time. So it'd be nice if they did get through into the group stages and actually laid love on some of the teams they're playing.
Yeah, just looking at the record of the Icelandic champions that they've been drawn against, I'm not going to attempt their name, but in the last couple of years, they pushed Malmo very, very close. They knocked TNS from Wales out. They won a leg at home against Lech Poznan from Poland and took them to extra time in the second leg before going out. And they took a leg off Riga last year as well. So they've got a decent recent European pedigree, particularly at home. They look very, very difficult. So That looks a tough tie for Shamrock Rovers in their current state.
Well, I think like it'll be a tough tie at any point, but I just with the way that they're playing, they're within themselves, lethargic, don't seem to be playing with a lot of free flowing confidence that you might have expected from a team that has won the last four leagues. So maybe that you'd be hoping that they would have kind of set themselves up better and playing more on the front foot and, you know, being top of the league. But I think there's been a bit of talk in recent weeks, can't remember who said it, but I might have even been talking about Limerick in hurling. But like, is there a bit of...
Alan Cawley said that on this pod, yeah, about a target on their back type thing.
No, like, are they just tired?
All right, yeah, I was going to say with Gareth McGlynn on our last pod, and he used the word, or maybe it was Alan, it was one of the two lads. I should remember what our guest said word for word, but apologies, lads. But one of them described Rovers as looking mentally fatigued this season.
Yeah.
And I've spoken to people that watch Rovers every week since that pod a couple of weeks ago. Obviously, you know, Gareth is a Derry City man, so he's probably hoping they are mentally fatigued. So I decided to go and chat to a couple of people that watch Rovers week in, week out, and that was exactly their take on it as well. So I do wonder whether he can freshen it up in the window, Stephen Bradley. He's not really one to do that in recent years. He's not been a manager to go and make three or four signings, but I think they probably need that. I know people will point to, oh, well, they have this player to come back and that player to come back, but with their injury record over the last couple of seasons, you just can't be relying on players coming back. I think they need to just go and get some fresh bodies in the door at Tallaght.
Yeah, and maybe move some of those players on. I know that might be a bit difficult, maybe with you know, the players that they have. But you know, I think it might be time to, you know, review that situation and bring in some, I don't know, heavy hitters. But at the same time, I think it was a complaint, was it from Dundalk a few years ago, where once players hear that you're playing in Europa League or Conference League or something like that, they're looking for a heap of money.
Yeah,
that you mightn't just have. So wasn't that boy that, what was your boy that was suing Dundalk?
Well, allegedly, I think. I don't know whether that's still ongoing or what. Yeah, but
what was his name?
Wilfred Zahibo.
Oh, good man yourself. Jeez, you had that right off the tongue. Tongue for legend, me arse. you know, and like, you know, that obviously attracts other issues when you're trying to, you know, maintain league champion status and also compete in Europe. So like, players are going to be looking for more money than they would have done otherwise. So it can be a bit more, you know, other teams are trying to get players at all.
I fully understand and appreciate what you're saying. I think they've built a rod for their own back in certain areas, though. Like, I think people can probably guess what I'm going to say next. The goalkeeper situation, that's a huge issue going into Europe. They've probably over-relied on players as well that have a checkered injury history and maybe haven't brought in sufficient backup for them. So I think they've left themselves vulnerable going into Europe, and it looks like it's going to be a tough task for them. But it was a more positive outlook on the Conference League draws today for the other two clubs, Derry and... I'm dosed, as you can hear from the weekend. But Derry City and Shells both getting really, really good draws today. We'll start with Derry, because they've been drawn against a familiar name in Bruno's Magpies. I obviously seen them last year against Dundalk, and I've been at a lot of European games, and so have you over the last couple of years. And they were without a doubt the worst team I've seen in Europe. So no excuses there for Derry. They should be winning that and winning that comfortably that time.
Any fear that they won't?
No fear. Not that I've seen Bruno's in the flesh.
I thought you said you saw them a couple of years ago.
I said, yeah, I have. The fact I've seen them in the flesh and I know how...
Oh, sorry, excuse me. Yeah. No, that makes sense. I think there just has to be, go out and do this now and be done with it. And then look forward to another goal. Is that, just to be clear and... forgive my ignorance, is there another draw after that, or is there brackets or what?
There's another draw tomorrow, isn't there? Pats are in the second round, so I assume that I assume they'll both be in the hat for tomorrow. I'm not actually sure. You'll have to forgive my ignorance as well. But yeah, look, they'll get over this first one. What about Shells? I don't know much about St. Joseph's, obviously. I've just had a look at their recent European history. 10-0 defeat against Limassol in the 17-18 season, a 10-0 aggregate defeat against Rangers a few years back. They beat Larne a couple of years ago, 1-0 on aggregate, but then were beaten 11-0 on aggregate by Slavia Prague. So again, Shelburne, they should be coming through that without too much hassle.
Well, they took pumpings against massive European teams. Like Slavia Prague would do that to some of the teams, would probably do that to most of the teams in the Premier Division now. So, you know, maybe I wouldn't just be being too calm about that. Like beating Larne, I know Larne probably would be towards the bottom of the First Division, or maybe would they be even First Division?
They've big investment in Larne the last few years, yeah.
Oh, was there, yeah?
Yeah, sure. They're the current champions, I think, as far as I'm aware.
Oh, that's right. Jesus, yeah. Sorry, yeah. My mind is all over the shop.
I suppose you're making a fair point, because I'm just looking at some of the other results. Torshavn, who we've seen play League of Ireland clubs in the past, they played them in 18-19 and they lost on penalties to them. The only two ties they've won, aside from Larne, they beat a team from Kosovo a few years ago as well. They went down narrowly against Torshavn again a few years ago when it was just the one-legged ties during COVID. And they got a draw against a team from Estonia a few years ago in one leg before losing the away leg. But I suppose...
Well, we could just ring up Bose and find out all about that. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, teams from leagues of, I suppose, similar stature to us, they've been competitive against, and Shells haven't been in Europe in nearly 20 years. So, yeah, they might have a bit of hassle against them. But I think, again, if they were to go out to a team from Gibraltar, Duffer would be very disappointed.
Oh, that's an understatement. Yeah, I think Shells need to be getting through this game just because of where they're from. And as I've said, I know, well, neither of us know very much about these boys, but I think the scorelines of 11-0 and all of that against Slavia Prague and stuff like that wouldn't be something that I'd be looking into necessarily. But it's just the results in leagues of similar stature to us, as you say, would be something that I'd be more interested in. So. Potential banana skin, but the way Shells are playing this season, I'd expect them to go through.
And sticking with Shells for the minute, a couple of signings today. Ali Coote back in the league, he's signed for Shells, and Sam Bowen as well, who we all remember at the likes of Dundalk in the past. He's been over in England, of course. He had that great FA Cup run last season. He's signed for Shells, probably looking at him maybe as a replacement for the centre half that they're about to lose.
Yeah, that's right. Probably not a surprise that he's moving on or going to somewhat bigger pastures than Shells, is it, for Gavin Malloy?
No. I'll be talking about him later on with Shane Keegan, but the only thing I'd say is it's disappointing again to see a player that's kind of come onto the scene in the last year or two and starting to show a bit of promise and straight away he's gone. It's proven extremely difficult.
Gone for dog shit money,
I know Duffer had made the remarks in the past about no release clauses at Shells, but he obviously had one from way back maybe, and he's gone for peanuts, which is very, very disappointing.
Yeah, I don't really know how that needs to be resolved. I know it was big talk a few years ago when at the time Danny Mandrio left for 30 grand or whatever that was, some daylight robbery that was done, but I think there needs to be a bit more. I don't know even know how to describe it, because I was read something there in the last few days about some fella from, I don't know where he was, what country or what club he was playing for, but I think he went for a few hundred grand.
Were you okay?
And you know, a league similar in size to the League of Ireland, and you're a few hundred grand into a club would be a huge, huge, huge lump of money to be getting. And to see that, like, we'll say, you know, a player that's having a particularly good season and has performed for Shells for a while going for that type of money is tough going. Or even, I think you mentioned it as well a few weeks ago about, I think, didn't Motherwell offer 5 grand for a player one time?
Well, recently they made a very insulting offer, I'd describe it, for Archie Davis at Dundalk, and I think they have form for that in the past with League of Ireland clubs. So
yeah,
we like to think that we're being looked at differently now, maybe, particularly Motherwell, who are, you know, knocked out by Sligo Rovers. You think they'd have a bit more respect for the league, but clearly they still think we're a soft touch. I suppose the only way you could stop stuff like this going on, all the clubs would have to sit down and sign an agreement that they won't give players release clauses, because we know what's happening at the minute. Agents are going around, they're saying, if you want to sign this player, he needs this release clause, and clubs are agreeing to it, because they know if they don't give it, he'll be down the road to another club and he'll get that release clause and he'll sign for them, and winning a league and not winning a league. So it's very difficult.
Just on that, like we'll say, on the flip side of that is Shamrock Rovers will say, can say, you know, we're not letting this boy go for 200 grand. But 200 grand is a big difference for a club like Longford Town. So it's not just as handy to say, oh, we can all sit around the table. And, you know, if some lad went to, I don't know, Drogheda, let's say, for example, here 250 grand for one of your players. Jesus Christ, I'm gonna have to really consider that, whereas Shamrock Rovers might be saying, nah, we want 400 firm and can live with not taking that money in. So I think it might even be hard to get a consensus from around the league. But I think something should be looked at. I don't know how that what that looks like really, but when you hear the money that the players are going for these days, it's just it's killing you, like.
Yeah. What about Sam Bone as a replacement for Malloy? Can you see that being a success?
No. Can you?
Funny enough, I would have, when I seen it today, I was surprised. I was surprised with the signing when I seen it today, but I probably was a bit surprised when Paddy Barrett went back to Shells, because I was looking at him thinking, you know, he's getting towards the end of his career, whatever, and he has been, like Duffer was quick to point him out when Malloy moved on. He said, look, Paddy Barrett's been our best player this season, probably best defender. So I think with the structure and the way Shells play, I could probably see Bone and Barrett, if that is the partnership, I can probably see that being a success, to be honest.
Yeah, that's actually a fair comment. I just was never a fan of Bone.
No, either would I.
And he's had a few clubs in the League of Ireland. Just wasn't for me. But look at I think Duffer has proven that he's able to get a tune out of a lot of players.
Yeah.
And why not Sam Bone as well? Because I know he had a few good games. Sure, everybody's a few good games. But, you know, there was times that... did he score a few bangers as well for Dundalk?
They used to throw him into the middle of the park at times when they were trying to see out a game. He can play a wee bit, so they used to throw him into the six. So, yeah, he probably did get a few.
I think he scored a couple of missiles. It was just... I'm not sure if I'm surprised or... Yeah, that makes sense. Or, like, he knows the league. He's played with Patson, Dundalk. Hopefully it works out. It'll be good for the league and good for the title challenge.
And you've talked about Duffer, I suppose, bringing in players from other clubs that they weren't successes and they've done well for him. Ali Coote had a fantastic start to last season with Bowes, and then I think there was a lot of rumours maybe his head was turned and performances kind of waned towards the end. You remember he came on in the cup final and he was non-existent. A lot of Bowes fans said he shouldn't have been anywhere near the pitch on the day, because I think there was rumours going around at the time he was off the Rovers, wasn't there, if I remember rightly.
That's right, yes.
He ended up going to the States. He's back now. Could he be the man to help fire Shells to the title?
Anybody know what happened over in the States?
Not sure why he's back, but he is. So.
It's kind of hard to know because he was such... He was kind of anonymous last season for Bowes.
Yeah.
It kind of got a bit toxic, as you kind of highlighted there, that he shouldn't have been on the pitch in the final, and he's this and he's that and the other. And I think for him to come back with Shells, it's very possible that it could be a real good match. I think, as I've highlighted already with Paddy Barrett and a few other players that Duffer has got his hands on, they've, you know, really improved them and had huge impacts on Shelburne and where they are now. So why can't it be the same for Ali Coote? I think the other thing, he will not get a second. Do you know what I mean? Like, he probably was given maybe a bit too much rope with Bowes. That softness that seems to permeate Bowes at the minute, he probably won't get the chance to be underperforming or not doing what he's told or not sticking to the game plan. That really won't be tolerated by Duffer. So he's in for a hard road slog, but he might get a league winning medal out of it.
Yeah, look, final word on Shells for now before we move on. 2 points clear of Derry City, 12 points clear of Rovers. Now, Rovers do have a game in hand. Can they go and win the title?
Yeah, absolutely. Why not? When you put it like that, like what? How many games has there gone? 18, 19?
22.
22? Oh, yeah, sure. We padded in a few games because the European exploits for the few teams at the top. Why not? I think their squad depth is going to be an issue. I know we're kind of saying that Shamrock Rovers have a better squad depth, but they've always have a bag of injuries or a lad, you know, walking up the stairs in his house away from an injury, you know. So
it's interesting that you went straight to Shamrock Rovers there and not Derry.
Oh, well, they're on the list as well. But they're... I don't know, some of their, like, what's it, Patrick McElhenney, like, what did he do? He broke his elbow, did he, or something like that? Like, at least it's not his legs.
No, I'm just talking about, you went straight from talking about, yeah, Shells could win it, and then you went to Rovers next. Why didn't you mention Derry? Like,
because I'm trying to get them out of my brain.
How many horses in this race? we actually had a very good tweet in. So on the Thursday night after the results came in, BTS account, is it now a two horse race for the Premier Division title? What were the other big talking points from the night? And I said we'd read some of them out on the show. And I'm just trying to find the tweet here. Someone was having a little dig out at us, but I thought it was a Derry fan, was he? I thought it was a good tweet. To be fair, I can't find it. But basically, he said, well, it's a two horse race because you know, you've said categorically on the show that the Derry City won't win it.
I said that myself.
We both
probably
said
did.
It. We, oh, both,
we
said
both
it.
Said it. Yeah. I think now I'm not taking any recent results into it, but like I think looking back on that, I probably have to take a step back from that statement simply because it's, who knows what can happen? Like, I just don't think when there's opportunities to go ahead in the league, I don't think Derry will take them. We saw last year that any time Shamrock Rovers filled the togs, well, Derry were right there with them. Mm-hmm. You know, they never capitalised on any stumblings that Shamrock Rovers did. I haven't seen anything this season that says that they won't do the exact same thing. You know, dropping points against Galway and Sligo, and you know they've had many opportunities to grab a hold of the league, and they never did it.
Yeah, I found the tweet from Mick McTiernan, who is a Derry fan. He said, "Shells and shams, sure. According to you guys, Derry have no chance."
Yeah, well, look, I admire his positivity. Like he's looking at an awful lot of dross up in the Brandywell this season.
I flew from Belfast over to Portugal last week, and there was a Derry City fan on the plane. He had the Derry jersey on, and I was walking up and down the aisle, and I stopped in for a chat with him. I said, "Jesus, lad, I thought you'd have enough dirt football to watch this year."
Yeah,
we had a good chat, and even he said, "Yeah, look, the football at times hasn't been Yeah, he said the football is not great, but they're still in with a shout of winning it. So,
yeah, they are within a shout, but I just don't think they have the. You know, I thought like when players like Duffy and McElhenney and that type of player was in there that they'd, you know, set the mentality straight maybe. But yeah, I'm not sure. I just think they don't have the ruthlessness required to go and win it. So that's why I don't think they'll win it. But at the end of the day, they're still only 2 points behind.
Go on, Matt, give us your prediction for the title.
Shells.
Ooh, I'm still not ruling out Rovers, funny enough.
Yeah, no, nor am I.
I'm nearly there now, but I'm still going to stick with it for a while.
Yeah, definitely. Like it's amazing to see that they're, 12 points behind game in hand, but we still think that they'll terminate their way through the league.
Yeah, I probably do see Shells as a greater chance than Derry.
Correct.
Yeah, we'll go through some of those tweets that you sent. It's just to refresh everyone's minds and our own, I think, on the most recent set of results. Last Thursday in the Premier Division, Galway United 3, Drogheda United 0. I think concern is starting to mount down in Weavers Park. We'll talk about that in a while. Waterford 0, Shelburne 1, a typical Shell result. And Dock 1, Sligo Rovers 0. I was at that. Sligo were atrocious. They'll still come down that table yet, trust me. Bowes 1, Derry 2. Not the first time Derry have got a late winner against Bowes this season. We've had a bit to talk about Bowes as well, so we'll come back to that in a minute. And Pats 2, Rovers 1, a huge win for Stephen Kenny's side. And in the First Division last Thursday, Bray beat Athlone Town by 1-0. Kerry defeated Longford by 2-1. Finn Harps won, UCD won. Harps reduced to 10 men during the game. Cork City with another smashing victory in the Cork Derby against Cove, 4-1. The winners there, Cork. And Wexford beaten at home by Treaty United. 10-man Treaty United coming out 1-0 winners. It's been a tough start to the season for Wexford. So we'll be talking about that as well. But let's just have a look at let's have a look at some of the tweets that came in after those games on Thursday. Jer said, I bet you're glad there's no third tier now. He's obviously talking about the Longford result there. Jamie, whose username is a lad from Donegal, he's a Hearts fan. He said, the standard of officiating across the entire league seems to have taken a massive slump since the start of the season. Harps keeper Tim Heimer gave away a free kick because the linesman said he was outside the area, and he gave us a screenshot, and he's miles inside his box. Kieran Carrick, can't understand Bowes fans giving out that Rennie was in Croatia with the 21s. They knew this before signing him. Yes, the optics are bad, but it's also it should be a massive pride point that he's working with the under-21 setup. I want to stop there, Gary, because that obviously was a huge talking point last week. What was your analysis on the whole Alan Reynolds under-21 situation?
Well, I was trying to piece it together. I know there was a huge amount to talk about it. On one hand, there was people saying that how could he have been allowed to do it? And I was thinking, well, surely this got some type of blessing from Bowes. But then not really sure if that went as high as the management of the club. So, you know, was it how much of a blessing did he get to go and do that? I'm not really sure. It seems insane that, yes, okay, we're taking you on and you can finish out this campaign. On one hand, maybe, like, does it sound that they didn't really envisage a game that would be going on, or a game week that would be going on with the under-21s and Bowes at the same time? I don't really understand how it got to that point. Mm. Well, no, I do have a fair idea. It's just Bowes don't really care about football and and what they're doing at the club. Like,
yeah, I just think the whole thing was handled terribly. Even we were talking recently about how some clubs become a bit more closed off in terms of media. They're a bit more controlled. And I know you had a bit of crack with the tweet when I went up from the league. There was comments from Reynolds before the game on Thursday saying how everyone had to work so hard all week, it was important for everyone to roll up the sleeves or something along those lines. And you just say, great rustling. Like, he shouldn't really have been allowed to come. Someone should have double-checked those comments before they went out. I think that was just setting them up for a kick, and they really they couldn't afford to lose that game against Derry, and they especially couldn't afford to lose it the way they did with a late goal. I think this could be a turning point in the Alan Reynolds reign of Bowes. I think he's really given himself a stick to be beaten with. Now, I do see that before they return, I think it's before the next league game, I believe there's going to be a Q&A session for Bowes members with Alan Reynolds. So I'm sure that's something that'll be addressed on the night. But
has that been announced? I saw there was the intention to do it, but I thought all these were owners to could just walk around the place and, well, Alan, what's the crack like?
I just think Alan and the club have given themselves a huge rod to be beaten with there. I think the whole thing's been handled terribly.
Yeah, I think so. I completely agree. I think, though, on the other hand, though, like, I think Bowes or Bowes fans and members and whatever they're called now, they've kind of... Do you think they've tolerated, like, a bit too much? We've often said that, or I don't know if the only one that has said that, but just, like, anything but football seems to matter at Bowes.
I think we've talked about it before, and I think there's even more pressure on everyone now going into this summer window. Alan Reynolds has already made comments that he'd like to move a lot of players on, essentially. So,
yeah,
if they don't get the recruitment right in this window, then I think that could be the final straw with the fan base, to be honest.
Right, well, I completely disagree. I think it was handled extremely poorly by the club. They should have resolved that and got out in front of that, had a clear understanding of what was actually going to happen. When, like, it's not that hard to go, oh yeah, playing games with the under-21s in June, we need to make sure that we're over that. They don't appear to have done that correctly, and yeah, it's a bit turned into a bit of a mess. But
are they in any danger of finishing in the bottom two, Gary?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think they'd be able to gather it up enough, or Anne Reynolds will be able to gather them up enough to get enough points throughout the rest of the season. But I don't think I don't think this is as big a deal for Bo's fans as you've made out there. I think that'll be forgotten about in the next month or so. When if they sign a couple of players that they might be happy with, then that's it all forgotten.
Yeah, no, look, the window will be absolutely huge.
What did you think?
I just thought the whole thing was very poorly handled, and it allows that narrative of football is in the second seat of Bo's. It allows that narrative to be spread further, I suppose. So, yeah, that's my thoughts on it. FPL Leon, big problems in the Drogs defence in 18 games this season. Galway have scored 11 goals in 2 games against Drogheda. They've scored 6. Need a big leader, an organiser at the back, amongst many other things. Ian Campbell, if Galway can win the games in hand, it could get interesting in the second half of the season, as we'll be on the tails of the top two and ahead of Shamrock Rovers. Paddy Walsh, if you had offered me 5th in the table at the halfway point, I'd have snapped your hands off. Get a decent striker in to help Walsh and we will be golden at Galway. David Doherty just says Danny Mullen. Derry, Liverpool, Rovers still win the league by at least 5 points. Ray Malone, delighted with Waterford this season, but an awful call from the linesman last night was very poor. Podge knew he was onside. He was spot on. Shell's a good side, but for me, Derry are the best team in the league. Yeah, if you didn't see that Padraig Ammond offside call, it was an absolute shocker. Seagull Chat, through some bizarre force of nature, we are now 3rd. The football has gotten much better since Ian Ryan's sacking/resignation/disappearing act. Brian Doherty with a good one, actually. Rovers right now, and it's a picture of a very beaten up Terminator. Gallagher, yes it is. He thinks it is a 2-horse race. Holt and Heroes, well done, Pats. Big friggin' result, certainly was. Emmett Sinnott, Wexford in danger of letting the season run away from them. Paul McCandles, I wouldn't rule out Rovers at all. Craig Kiley, what's happening in Longford? We might come back to that later, Craig. Cormac Murphy, Drogheda having a stinker this season. Thoughts on us? I'm just looking. I think you're a Rovers fan. Sorry, he's a Drogheda fan. Thoughts on us and if we're likely to be heading to the executioner's block and back to the First Division. What do you think about Drogheda? Are they... is their goose cooked or can they get out of this, Gary?
I think it's probably more pronounced that there isn't a whipping boy this season that, you know, starts at the bottom and ends at the bottom like UCD or maybe Longford a few years ago. I don't think Sligo are good enough to stay out of the bottom too. I think you agree with that, but yeah. I also think it's going to be a shootout for those two to finish in 9th. I think they're probably as bad as other, and there isn't one team that's worse that are going to say, yeah, I'm going to...
Where are you on Dundalk now? Where do you think they're going to finish?
I think they'll finish just outside that. Do you not think so?
Above the bottom two?
Yes.
Yeah, I do, yeah. I've seen enough of a turn and...
Yeah, but also, like, you highlighted that even, like, we'll say before...
John Daly
took over that, yeah. You saw some,
yeah,
something in the theme.
I will say this on the bottom three, and even we'll say bottom four for now. I think Bo's, yes, we probably both think they'll get out of it, but they are at this moment in time, halfway through the season, they're in a relegation battle. I think the summer window is going to decide everything in regards to who stays up and who goes down, because not only will it be important who you get in, but it's going to be who you can keep in terms of loan signings, because I know that's a big question on the mind in regards of McGinty at Sligo, the two Zachs, Bradshaw and Johnson at Dundalk, and I know Drogheda have players on loan as well, and probably are unlikely to keep all of them for the second half of the season. So
yeah,
whoever can manage to negotiate some sort of positive deals there in terms of keeping players and extending loan deals until the end of the season, and obviously what type of players you can bring in, I think whoever has the best window will give themselves the best chance of staying up.
And I think Drogheda, do you think they'll be able to get someone in at the back? I know there was a question there when you read out that list of messages that they need someone in at the back, like they're missing.
Yeah.
They're missing that personality, aren't they?
Yeah, they've conceded the most goals this season.
Well, there you go.
37-21. It's a very poor defensive record. Not something we associate with Drogheda. But no, even the goals scored, 20 goals scored in 21 games. Franz Perrault, I still think he'll probably come good. Be interesting to see, though, what type of forward signings Kevin Doherty makes, as much as obviously the fact that he does need to improve at the back. I think the goalkeeping situation is something that's probably gone under the radar a bit there as well. We spoke so much, myself in particular, because I obviously was at a lot of Drogheda games last year.
Yeah,
young Andrew Wogan was phenomenal last season, and he struggled with injuries this season, and it seems to really have knocked his confidence. He seems to be just in a difficult position at the moment, and Barr that come in for Wogan was doing well, and then he got sent off in the Louth derby.
Right.
I think he's had injuries as well on and off, and just between the two of them, they both look like they're really struggling for confidence at the moment. So that's a problem area that probably needs to be resolved in some shape or manner. So he's got a lot going on there, Kevin Doherty. Do you make favourites at this moment in time to finish bottom?
I wouldn't, no.
You wouldn't?
No.
Who's favourites? Sligo?
Well, they'll be my favourites, yeah.
They're 9 points ahead of bottom now at the minute. And a superior goal difference. So you can say 10 points.
And they're in ninth.
Sligo's in seventh.
Seventh, yeah.
Drogheda in 10th bottom.
I don't know. Maybe I'm being clouded by my anti-Sligo head on me, but
Sligo really need bodies in. I saw them in Oriel Thursday. Very, very blunt. Their best player is Fabrice Hartman. I could count on one hand how many times he touched the ball. They had nothing through the middle. And towards the end of the game, they had to bring on young players like young Elding. So that they're very, very light on bodies. We knew they were at the start of the year.
Is that going to get any better, do you think, in the window? Like, are they going to be able to attract players that can make a difference in this?
I think they just need to get bodies in.
What's that bad?
I'm not saying to go out and sign absolute dross, but I think they just need to beef that squad up in some shape or manner.
Yeah, no, I certainly hear you. Just on the Drogheda piece, they need a centre half. They need another lad in there. I'm not sure if they like to concede. How many goals did you say? 37 goals.
And, yeah.
Yeah, like that is just, it's not possible.
They've got connections in England these days, so maybe there's someone they can get across. But in terms of, like, we all know they lost Conor Keighley from last season. He was someone that, I suppose you could say he knew the league, but he played most of his football in the first division until he signed for Drogheda. So I don't know if it's that important of a thing to know the league, but
no,
not that many experienced centre-halves you can go out and sign. Like, I think back to someone like Conor Kenna coming to Longford and players like that. I don't know if there's that many kind of players knocking around the league anymore, real experienced veteran centre-halves that you can bring in.
No, probably not. And, you know, because there's that, you know, emptiness in that respect, that they're probably, you know, they're finding it a bit harder to plug that gap. But I think something has to give here, and probably the week off has given Kev and Dara some time to think about it, because I think that's it's obviously a huge problem. Like, and I wouldn't even be as concerned with the goal scoring end of it, as because, so I've said 1,000 times, it's important for Drogheda to stay in games and not be a couple of goals behind trying to rescue something. So
I think the fact, and you can tell me if you're thinking along the same lines, but I think the fact that we've seen them in this sort of position before, we know the characters Kevin and Darren, we know the likes of Gary Deegan in that dressing room and players like that. The Ryan Brennan's still there as well. I think we're not panicking, whereas if this was another team, we'd be saying, oh, geez, these boys are in big trouble. But I don't think we're panicking just because we know the makeup of Drogheda and they've been in this race before.
Yeah, but like, you know, this can't go on forever. Like,
no.
That's the point. And as much as, like, they've done it before, they've escaped and they've, you know, that's all 100%. But it's, I think there'll come a time when, you know, the escape and act, like, we'll say, we saw it with Finn Harps so many times under Ollie in the Premier Division that they managed to just sidestep relegation. But that, you know, then they were finally caught. So it's something that I thought would change with the recent investment, really. But I know that wasn't, you know, a bombshell investment. You know, here's
steady stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But thought it would just big job anyway going.
Yeah, look, great to get all the listeners' reaction there from the results last week. We'll have more listener questions, the usual BTS hotline, at the end of the show. But before we go any further, we're going to bring you our guest this evening, Shane Keegan, obviously former manager, a number of clubs in the league, and one of the leading voices when it comes to League of Ireland football these days. Delighted to say he joins us on our mid-season review show to break down what we've seen in the first half of the League of Ireland season so far. I'm delighted to be joined on our mid-season review show by former League of Ireland manager, current League of Ireland pundit, Shane Keegan. Shane, good to see you. How are you keeping?
Here and all good. Hope you're keeping well.
So, look, we've reached the summer break. I suppose you've been in this position before as a manager. Some managers will be happier than others at this stage of the season. I suppose we'll start with the Premier Division. I don't think many would have dreamed Shelburne been in the position that they're in at the moment.
Listen, it's absolutely incredible the job that he's doing, Kieran, to be honest. I'll be honest with you, I thought he probably overachieved last year in getting them to finish as high as they did last year. So to kick on from there and do what they're doing so far this year is it's an absolutely outstanding job. Absolutely outstanding job. Look, I still think it's a big challenge to keep it going for the whole rest of the season, but they've given themselves every chance. You know, like the fact that they came through that blip, even where, should have went how many games? Went maybe six games without a win there at one stage and still found themselves top of the table because everybody else was tripping up behind them as they went through that blip. And look, the biggest compliment you can pay Duffer, Kieran, is like when you think about what is any manager's job is to try and make their team more than the sum of its parts. And there's absolutely no doubt that he's done an incredible job. And don't pick me up wrong, I'm not saying that he's a shower useless fuckers there with him or anything like that, but it's not 11 names I would have brought down or 15, 16 names I would have brought down and said, yeah, that group is capable of being top of the table or potentially winning the league. And yet that's exactly where he's got them. And look, there just seems to be an outstanding camaraderie between the group. He's got them all, you know, there's no doubt everybody absolutely empties themselves every single time they go out onto the field. And he's built this wonderful us against the world mentality that he's worked hard on, no doubt about that. So I think that's a big kind of USP for him. And yeah, look, I still don't know if they can go the whole way, but they've shocked me up till now. What's to say they won't continue to do so?
Yeah, and just broach it into a wider subject, I suppose. A lot of talk this season in particular about the standard of the league. Where are we as a league? And you see Gavin Molloy getting ready to leave Shelburne now after, really bursting onto the scene over the last couple of seasons. But again, it's a player that has shown promise. He's immediately been snapped up by a team across the water. It seems like it's very, very difficult for clubs to retain their talent at the moment. I know that's always been the case, but we seem to be losing an awful lot of players at the moment over the last couple of seasons.
Ah, yeah. Look, it's absolutely inevitable. We do the, I know you've tuned in a few times yourself, we do the late night League of Ireland on a Friday night as people are coming home from games. And I spoke last Friday night that I thought Shells would do very, very well to hold on to Gav. Now, I think a few people jumped to conclusions and thought that I had already got an inside track that he was even. I genuinely didn't. I just thought, here's a fella that absolutely fits the mold of what English clubs are after. I've spoken to English clubs and agents and scouts enough times to know what they're after. And he ticked every box for me. So it came as no surprise. I didn't expect maybe for it to happen quite as quick as it did to find out the next day he was gone. But like, there's no way of stopping that, Kieran. That's always going to be the case. And look, I think Duffer might have tried to claim at one stage that no, no Shells player had a buyout clause in their contract. Yeah. But I think that came unstuck very, very quickly. And it's impossible. As a manager, you're in a position that you're trying to sign the best possible players that you can. The agent then comes with a buyout clause, and it's very simple. You agree to, you come to an agreement on a buyout clause that you think is fair, or he goes down the road and he signs for somebody else who will agree to that buyout clause. It's just impossible to keep him, Kieran. And you can understand from the individual's perspective, unfortunately for us, getting across the water is still the holy grail for most young players. And like I say, it's impossible to, he won't be the only one. I would be very surprised if he's the only name that we see disappearing out of the league, unfortunately, over the next 2-3 weeks.
And of course, it's been two of the old guard that have really shone in terms of scoring goals this season, in Padraig Amond, who was named Player of the Month recently, and Patrick Hoobin. They're the top two scorers in the division. I know Gareth McGlynn on the show last week, and he spoke about his disappointment that there's maybe not more younger strikers coming through that are scoring goals. Do you think we're suffering a talent drain at the moment in the league?
Sure, listen, we haven't. I mean, again, you know, anybody who's been tipping around the League of Ireland probably gets reasonably regular kind of texts or phone calls from contacts that build up across the water, you know, asking about players and that. And listen, the most common question you get from any of the kind of League One clubs or clubs of that standard over there is there a goal scorer in the league that we can make a move on? And the last time I was able to answer yes to that question, obviously what they mean is a goal scorer who's probably the right side of mid-20s, let's say. You know, there's no point recommending a Pat Hoobin or a Padraig Amond to anybody coming looking for a goal scorer at the moment. But honestly, Kieran, I think it's Sean Maguire since I've been able to answer that question affirmatively. Like, you know, there hasn't been a striker that you could say to teams across the water, this is a young fella who knows where the back of the net is and has a real, real chance of scoring goals consistently for you. Players go on streaks, and some players have done very well. I'm not saying that we haven't got any goal scorers in the league, but I think the most outstanding players now in our division or in our league for the last, season and a half, I would count all of last season in and the first half of this season, all of those players, to me, have nearly all been defensive-minded players. They've been the ones that have stood out the most to me. And if you ask me for my top five players of last season or my top five players this season, nearly all of them would be either centre-halves, full-backs, or sitting centre-midfielders. We do need a few more players to get really excited about, Kieran. Like, you know, you tell me who in the division at the moment, when they get the ball, does the crowd get on their feet and expect something to happen? You know, when you think of, you know, when Danny Grant was absolutely flying before he went across the water, that kind of player, suppose, look, probably the closest to it, and obviously he's plagued with injuries, is Frugia. He is the one, look, if I'm at a game or if I'm watching a game on TV and the ball comes to his feet, I'm expecting something to happen. You know, I stand up and I expect something to happen. Probably don't quite have enough of those kind of players in the league at the moment.
Yeah, Gary, my co-host, will be glad to hear you say that, because that's the exact comment he's made on this show a few times, that there's very few players in the league at the moment that he'd pay in to see, whereas in years gone by, we had those real X-factor and star players. You mentioned there that a lot of the players that have stood out for you over the last season and a half have been defensive players, so maybe it's not a surprise that Shelburne are doing so well, because they are the masters of, again, not to say that they can't play football, that they can't attack, but they are so, so well organised. Maybe we shouldn't be surprised that they're sitting top of the tree at the mid-season break.
Yeah, and it's gas. Shells fans nearly seem to get insulted when you talk about them being well organised. Like, you know what I mean? It's the highest compliment you can pay a team. But I would agree with Shells fans that they have now put another layer on top of that. Look, I think any manager worth their salt, it's the defensive side of the game they'll go after first. And that's clearly what Duffer did. But he has now absolutely added another layer to it. You look at last year's passing stats and possession stats. Shells were well down in the bottom half of the table in terms of passing stats and possession stats. That's not the case at the moment. Not that they need to do an awful lot better. It's up to Duffer to decide what way. And to be fair to him, he's also been very flexible. You know, they'll go into one game and they look very possession based, far more than I thought they would ever have been capable of looking at them last year. But then they'll look at another opposition, Shamrock Rovers being the notable one, where they decide, well, actually, we don't want to retain the ball here. Getting at these boys quick and trying to play in behind them is the way to go. So he's shown some really, really good tactical flexibility in that sense. But, you know, look, obviously, Will Jarvis is the one attacking talent that you could say gets you up off your seat and that you do expect things from. But the fulcrum of the team is built around that Gavin Molloy, Paddy Barrett axis with Mark Coyle kind of sitting in front of them. That's what's made them, for me, that's what has made them the team that they are this year. And yeah, in a team or in a league where there isn't a massive abundance of get you off your seat kind of players and natural goal scorers, then the team that does the basics best is going to be the team that's going to shine. That's been them.
You've said that there's still a small doubt in your mind whether they can go all the way. Who's their biggest threat? Is it Derry? Is it Shamrock Rovers? Who else is in the mix maybe?
I don't think at any point so far this season have I felt that Shamrock Rovers weren't going to win the league. But I'm getting there. Right. I'm getting there. I'm very, very, very close to it. You know, I the fact that they were kind of up and down and up and down and yet nobody seemed to be establishing a gap, I just thought was criminal, really. And I felt that there was going to need to be a 10 to 12 point gap by the mid-season break for any team to realistically finish ahead of them. And even up to a couple of weeks ago, it didn't look like that was going to happen. But here we are. Here we are. We've reached a mid-season break, and they are that exactly that many points ahead, or sorry, behind of not one but two teams. And look, I think it's almost more forgivable for Shells to allow Rovers to catch them than it is for Derry to allow Rovers to catch them at this stage. Shells are still very new to the idea of challenging for a league title, both in terms of their manager and in terms of most of the players that they've got and the levels that they've operated at previously. It would have been more of an expectation for Derry to be there or thereabouts. And like, if you would said to Rory at the start of the season, now I know there's games in hand and all of that kind of stuff, but still, if you would said to Rory at the start of the season, going into the mid-season break, you're going to be 10 points clear, he would have took your arm off for that, and he would fully have expected his team to go and do the job from there. I don't know. I'm still on the fence. I fully expect Rovers, for all the stuttering and stumbling and for all that they don't look quite the side that they have been in past years, I still fully expect them to go on a 7-game run of 5 wins and 2 draws somewhere along the line. And it's up to whether the other two can live with them when they go through that period. But that bit of a lead that they've got certainly gives them every chance now, Kieran.
And Stephen Bradley, he's obviously overseeing this entire project all the way through, winning the 4 league titles in a row and doing well in Europe. But he's never been one for making big bulk acquisitions, has he? Particularly in the summer window, he's almost followed the Stephen Kenny Dundalk mantra of just adding one or two here or there. But do you think he might need to go out and sign 3 or 4 players just to add some freshness to the group now in the summer?
I'd say he'd probably take 3 or 4 players returning from injury and being guaranteed that he has them for the second half of the season over actually signing 2 or 3 new players, to be honest with you. Look, that has obviously...
When you were managing, did you ever have a sequence like that where the injury list at Rovers has just been so lengthy all season long? Did you ever go through a phase like that? And was there anything that you could point towards in terms of, you know, sports science or anything to say, right, we need to try something different here?
Jeez, like, I can't ever remember it being as bad as it has there. Like, we definitely would have had periods where you had 3 or 4 key players out, but it's just crazy the level that's happened at over there. And look, he's said publicly himself, hasn't he, that they are doing everything they can to look into, is there any logical reason behind this? Is there anything that they need to change to try and alleviate the problems that they've had? Sometimes it's just absolutely freak bad luck, but I don't know, it's at such an extent there now that naturally enough they have to be looking at every little thing and trying to see, is there something that they're not quite doing right? But you would imagine, you know, money is not an object there. You'd imagine that they've invested in the best of sports science in every kind of possible way. So it's so hard to put your finger on it. It really, really is. But like I say, if they could get them back, like we said about the signings, you're right. But at the same time, I think sometimes when you sign a player who's been at the club before or sign a player who's been in the league before, it tends to float under the radar a little bit more. Like signing Trevor Clark on a full-time basis, signing Johnny Kenny on a full-time basis, these were still absolutely massive acquisitions for me. Look, the one obviously that I was surprised at was the goalkeeping situation. That that is an unusual kind of scenario for Stephen to have found himself in, particularly when he's been in that boat before. You would have thought absolute certainty over his number one would nearly be a priority for him based on the lessons he's learned previously. And that's, you know, there's certainly still kind of question marks in that sense.
Just as we're speaking, the Champions League draw is going on, and Rovers have been drawn against the Icelandic champions. So I'm not sure what to make of that at the moment. Just having a look at their recent history in Europe, they did pick up a 1-0 win against Riga last year, but they lost the second leg. They got a win against Lech Poznan a couple of seasons ago. They overcame TNS from Wales. They ran Malmo close. It looks like it could be a tough enough draw for Shamrock Rovers, that one.
I noticed that you didn't make an effort to try and pronounce the team name.
No, we'll get to that later. This is live at the moment, so
I'm looking at it here myself, and I don't think I'm going to make an effort at it either. You would have said that Europe had to be a big thing for Rovers this year because it was so disappointing last year. Let's be honest, Kieran, they were supposed to reach this point of the season, you know, 5 or 6 points clear at the top. And able to fiddle around with a starting 11, knowing that they had a little bit of leeway for resting players or even dropping a couple of points here and there over the second half of the season domestically. But it hasn't panned out that way. And I think the fact that they are going to have to put so much focus on trying to retain their league title, because otherwise they don't get back to the level they want to be at in Europe. It's like chicken and egg here, really, that I think they are going to end up taking the eye off the ball in Europe again. I think they're going to have to. You have to prioritise the league. You have to prioritise the league because you have to keep finishing first to keep building on the longer-term plans that you have. So I would have, at the start of the season, I would have said, Rovers will win the league again, and I think they'll have a right rattle off of Europe. But now I think one impinges on the other.
The race for Europe is interesting, isn't it? Waterford currently sit fourth. Now, I think there's no guarantee this season that fourth will be enough, given the way the cup draw panned out the first round. Like, there's going to be so many big clubs taking each other on early that it could open up for someone like a Waterford or Galway, or even someone like a Dundalk, maybe, I think, could go on a run in the cup this year. So, but traditionally, fourth has been enough. Waterford are a fourth at the minute, as I said. Galway only a point behind. Pats, for all their ups and downs and the turbulence of this season, they're only 4 points behind fourth at the minute. Would you still make them favourites to finish in the top four?
I would, Kieran. Yeah, I would, to be honest with you. But I agree with you. I think you look at the two teams in fourth and fifth at the moment, and Waterford and Galway, and to be fair to them, they're both looking and going, well, hold on, we have a double shot at here. We have a double shot. Yeah. We can get to Europe. We can get to Europe by trying to finish fourth and hoping one of the big three wins the cup, or we can go and try and win the cup ourselves. I think it's very, very exciting if you're a supporter of Waterford or Galway this season. Absolutely no doubt, because of that kind of double chance potentially of getting themselves into Europe. But yeah, look, that was a massive result for Stephen last Thursday. Absolutely massive result for Stephen. And you would think that will potentially now start to breed a bit of momentum and put a bit more belief back into them. And I think they could improve enough to go and get fourth and start to move things in the right direction. I do think, with his own set of players, with his own budget, and with everything kind of from scratch next season, I fully expect Pats and Stephen to immediately jump and go challenge for the title. I think if he could get them into fourth this year, I think that would be a substantial achievement. But like you say, I think the FAI Cup is going to be a cracker this year. I think it's going to be an absolute cracker this year, and that draw just added spice to it.
Have you been surprised by how well the two newly promoted sides have done or not?
Sure I have, Kieran. Yeah, there's no point saying otherwise, and I've probably been surprised for different reasons. Galway, obviously, I was managing in the first division last year, and Galway were just relentless, absolutely relentless. But I suppose in my head, I was going, the style of play, the system here is quite one-dimensional. They're just absolutely brilliant at that one dimension. and I just felt that bigger teams with more resources and better players and more prep time would be able to figure them out. And I thought they might struggle once they got figured out and maybe not have a plan B, but I've been put in my place. Like, they've done absolutely brilliantly. And it's still pretty much that same way of playing, I don't think that it is massively that they've developed a plan B. I think they've just got even better at plan A.
Yeah.
So hard to break down, so hard to score against. John, being the motivator that he is, you know every player who goes out onto the pitch for him. I mean, obviously, Walsh is the standout example of it. Again, you know, it's similar to Shells. I mean this as a compliment rather than an insult. Like, talk about getting the most out of yourself. Like, you know, he's made an absolute fool of me, Kieran. Like, this is a guy that, you know, was kind of in and out of my team as a left back when I was Galway manager. Like, it's phenomenal what the likes of Walshy has managed to do with his career. And it's just brilliant to see him banging him in at that level. Waterford had question marks with over for the simple fact that we found ourselves very, very much able to live with them in the playoff final. And given the amount of limitations we would have had as a club, I was thinking, geez, if we're able to live with them, they're gonna have very big problems when they go up there and meet the teams of real, real quality. And I was actually I was on co-commentary for Radio Foyle the night they were at home to Derry, about, I don't know, how long are they on this good run? And 6 to 8 weeks ago, thereabouts. And they were abysmal that night. So they were. And at that stage, I says, these boys are going to do well to avoid relegation. And it's literally since that game, Kieran, bar maybe one or two blips, they've been brilliant. They've been absolutely brilliant.
The football they're playing, I think I've seen every team now in the Premier Division at this stage, or nearly them all anyway. And Waterford is a team I actually really look forward to watching live or on the telly. They play a really good brand of football.
They do. And that, to me, that's the point here, is I actually think that game against Derry has been the catalyst for what we've seen since, because they were very, very direct that day, very defensive minded. Podge was so isolated from the rest of his team and the whole lot. And I think that was the one where Keith looked at it and says, nah, we need to go about this. We're going to have to try and become a possession-based team. If we want to get the most out of Podge, we have to become a possession-based team. We have to be able to work it into the final third and deliver him the correct kind of supply. And since that game, they've been absolutely outstanding. Waterford fans must be loving life at the moment.
And actually, we were talking earlier about maybe a lack of players in the league that you'd pay an admission fee to go and watch. But Asamoah is one player that definitely gets you on the edge of your seat at Waterford.
Yeah, he's electric, all right. So he is. I'd forgotten about him when I was talking about it. He's electric, and they're able to do that every now and again. Waterford, for a long time now, they've kind of pulled someone out of nowhere that turns out to be an absolute revelation for them in the way that Patterson was, I suppose, and different guys like that. But no, I'd agree with you. He's been excellent, and look, because at times they have to sit off and let the opposition have the ball. When you've got that out ball and pure pace, it gives you a bit of a chance, even when you need to play the backs to the wall approach.
Yeah, they'll do well to keep him, though, you'd have to feel, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would think so. Again, you'd maybe fear the relationship with the club across the water, and whether a Patterson job is what will happen here on something like that. It will be interesting to see how that plays out.
And look, finally, on the Premier Division for now, the relegation battle is very intriguing this season. For a long time, people were pitching it as been a two-horse race, the two Louth clubs. But you look at Bohemians and their results are late. They've slid down the table. I know they've got games in hand, but I seen Sligo last Thursday in Oriel, and I thought they were very, very poor. They had a couple of poor results just before the break as well. I think it's those four clubs at the moment. I'm not saying the Bows are going to go down. I think Bows will probably be okay in the second half season, but I wouldn't be surprised if Sligo do go on a slide in the second half. What would be your thoughts on that relegation battle?
Yeah, to be honest, not to sound too much like a parrot, but I'd broadly agree with you there. Very, very much I would be surprised, even though they're in a poor run of form at the moment, I would be surprised to see Bows get sucked in there. It'd be interesting to see if they manage to bring in new bodies. I would expect them to do so, considering they've lost.
I think Alan Reynolds has pretty much put the message out there, hasn't he, that he wants to certainly jig up that squad as much as he can now in the summer.
Yeah, you can be sure of it. Again, that, you know, when you look at it, anytime a manager comes in and therefore it's not the squad that he put together in pre-season, you can be sure there's definitely going to be an extra reason to want to make signings there. I would expect them to be good or too good to be properly sucked into that. Sligo are, look, John got off to a fantastic start, and he needed that, you know, because, you know, I think I heard a couple of interviews with him towards the end of last season, and he was talking about the disappointment of last season and lessons learned and all that. And he, you know, he was a manager heading into this season under pressure, and he got off to a cracking start, in fairness to him. But reality has kind of kicked in, and they've started to slide probably.
They look light on bodies as well, don't they?
They do.
Game Thursday, the likes of Wilson that was with you last season, he's a good player, but he's stepping up to the first division. Young Elding coming on as well. They're relying on a lot of young players or players that don't have Premier Division experience.
And that becomes a big worry if he gets sucked right into a scrap there. And again, look, he's so easy, much easier said than done, but they could do with a few. They could definitely do with a few been brought in. They tend to be one of the more creative clubs, I suppose, in terms of their signings and where they source them from and that, but they could definitely do with finding a diamond to help them. I just think they could be okay. I'm not sure if the bottom two can accumulate enough points to close the gap that's there. I think that start might prove the good start that they have might end up proving to be enough, even if it's only by a couple of points. But I mean, you were talking about the gap between Dundalk and Sligo, what, a Six. Month ago thereabouts was massive, and now it's not. But you know, it probably is still enough to keep them alive. I think it is. I think it is the two loud clubs that we're going to be looking at going toe to toe for those two spots.
Obviously, people will call me biased. I see a lot of Dundalk, but I've seen a lot of them since Stephen O'Donnell has left, and I think they really have improved. And I think if they can have a good summer window, I think they'll be absolutely fine. What about Drogheda? A lot of people are very concerned for them.
Yeah, I would have backed Drogheda all the way. I suppose I would just have a massive... I've kind of always found myself in positions where I tend to be managing underdog clubs myself, and therefore I have a massive appreciation for what Kev has been able to do with Drogheda and Tim before that when he was in that role. Drogheda, I love them. I think they're brilliant. I think it's amazing how they managed to punch so far above their weight consistently over the last few years. And I suppose that bit of know-how and a bit of experience of how to get out of it... was why I was, you know, certainly up until the last week or two, I would still have been saying, I still think Drogheda can do this. But yeah, I must admit to the fact I'm wavering at this stage. Dundalk do look that is an appointment. Finally, they've made an appointment that seems to be working in their favour. And John seems to have a lot more of a cohesive unit there. Boyler is looking a lot better at the back again. Ryan O'Kane, I've been stunned at how Ryan hasn't kicked on. I mean, from a bit of time I had with him up there, he was one of the best young talents I have come across. I think he's an outstanding footballer. I think he got an assist for one of the goals last week, which is great to see. I think he can be, he's the sort of player for me that can be the spark that kind of kicks things on for them. And I don't know. I'm not sure if they have enough to go and catch Sligo, but I do think they have enough to keep themselves ahead of Drogheda probably at this stage.
And finally, Shane, just before we let you go, a quick word on the first division. Look, Cork, I think you fully agree, Cork are going to win it. I think we spoke about it on last week's podcast. They're going to need to improve a lot next season if they're going to be competitive in the Premier Division. But is there any team that surprised you, let it be in a positive sense or in a negative sense, this season in the first division? Has there been a team that you've been looking at every week and you're thinking, how are they that position in the table?
Yeah, I'll probably pull one on both sides. Probably the biggest surprise. I know they've slid a little bit in recent weeks, but Finn Harps were probably the one. They were a bit of a mess last year. And I wasn't sure if they had done enough business. Success is a decent signing. David Cawley was a very good signing for them. They've done a bit of decent business in the off-season, but for me, I found it next to near impossible to see how second to fifth, in whatever order, I don't know what order, but I always thought that those four teams would be UCD, Bray, Wexford, and who had I? Athlone. But now Athlone probably, I would have thought Athlone were probably only going to sneak in there, maybe as that one. So they're probably, you know, they've surprised me to a certain extent as well. They've been the two that are doing better. Fully expected what we've got from UCD. Not a lot of people did. I got a great price on UCD betting without market. I went betting without Cork. I thought UCD were a fantastic bet. We played them in the FAI Cup last year, and as well and all as we were doing in First Division, Kieran, we couldn't get anywhere freaking near them in that game. I thought they were absolutely excellent. So that one hasn't surprised me. Wexford, that's probably the one on the disappointing side of things. I think the quality that they've got there, individual player-wise, I thought it would be between themselves and Bray for third. And look, they're probably, I'm looking down at the table here, 4 points off. I didn't actually realise it was gone to four. They have got a game in hand on Harps, but I mean, it would be, quite honestly, it'd be a bit of a catastrophe for them if they missed out in the playoffs altogether, you know?
Yeah. Shane, an absolute pleasure catching up with you. Thanks so much, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Spot on, Kieran.
Are you enjoying the show? Please consider buying us a beer via our website betweenthestripes.net or head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI. Thank you for your continued support of Between the Stripes.
Yeah, great to hear from Shane Keegan. Most of the league's away on holiday at the moment, all over the place, but mainly Spain and Portugal, I think. So we had to get the thinking caps on and say, who's still in the country? And Shane Keegan was on hand to answer the call. So thanks to Shane for that. Obviously, we kind of talked very in-depth in the first half of the show about the Premier Division season so far, Gary. We'll move on to our bread and butter, which is the First Division. And we said we'd come back to a couple of questions that were sent our way in the previous segment. I suppose the first one, we had Craig asking about Longford Town and what's gone wrong really this season for the town. Give me your views on that, I suppose, as painful as it might be to discuss.
So it was actually probably great to get a break from thinking about Longford Town in the last week or so. I think, would you say like a few things have gone wrong, but nothing, oh yeah, you know, it was this thing or that thing in particular. I think Longford Town in the last couple of years have been very, very, very injury prone and probably one of the worst teams in the division for injuries. Like, I think me and you, we were preparing for a stream one week and I think there was 8 lads sitting around drinking tea,
yeah,
before the game, injured, like on the, you know, on the injury list. And then you have like other like silly things like Carl Chambers breaking his nose and out for two or three games. You know, I know.
Should they be where they are though? Because Treaty United have had dreadful injuries this season, and have had a really difficult start to the season, and they're quite a few points above Longford.
Yeah, well, I think the anomaly there is that Treaty won their first three games of the season, which was a total, you know, it was a mess. Like, that was never a true reflection of what was going on. But those points remain on the board come the end of the season, and Longford Town never got that. I think, and
I suppose Longford could have had a similar kind of start, but the true games away.
The true games away, certainly.
And even the legends threw the game away on Saturday, 3-0 up against Man United. I was brought on to try and see it out, but I think our friend Fitz is his old man. I think he had a bar of soap on the old goalkeeper gloves he spilt to, and it ended 3-3. So, it's the story of Longford Town season, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's kind of really permeated the club in a few different areas, but the issue or one thing. And Hendo did mention it to be, and I do agree with him at the time. The two or three games that Longford Town had off.
Yeah.
Now, on one hand, people are looking at that, right? We catch our breath. We can look at it. I think that really damaged the fitness for the players.
Definitely did.
And then they were like, right, we're going to have to ram these games in to catch up. And on one hand, that was looked at as a positive. We probably looked at it as a positive. You know, you have time, you have opportunity, extra opportunities here to correct the league or correct your position and results. But that actually just didn't actually materialize at all. And it probably put more pressure on. If you don't have a good game Friday, you have another one on Monday. And if it's not going well, you're not actually looking forward to that. You'll be like, oh shit, I have to look at this now. You know, that saying about like, oh, you have a chance to right that wrong immediately. You have to be in a relatively positive space to
and you mentioned the injuries
like
as well. What I've noticed is like Wayne Groves, he's hardly been able to rotate that team at all because the same group of players used to select every week. So I think that's all fair. But look, I think people will be listening to it and say, here's the lads making excuses. I think we're both in agreement. Longford, they shouldn't find themselves bottom of the first division, but that's just where they are at the moment, and we hope for better in the second half of the season.
No, completely. But like, I think the other thing is like the amount of points that have been like booted away or pissed away, like that Bray game, mentally wet evening, Longford Town go 1-0 up, really good play, managed to lose in the, I don't know, was 113th minute or whatever it was. And that was a deflection. So Brady nearly still managed to scramble away.
And those 13 minutes were only added on because the Bray goalkeeper broke something.
Yeah. And then like you have other things like
stuff. So wasn't actually freakish stuff. I wasn't annoyed about that game because it was just a total freak occurrence. Whereas
it was a good performance.
The Athlone game was totally unacceptable to lose a 3-0 halftime lead against an Athlone team that were all over the shop. I thought at halftime, this is going to be 7 or 8-0 for Longford. To throw that game away, that was unacceptable. There was probably other games that were similar. The Harps game, the first game of the season. There's just been a lack of game management. I suppose that comes back, though, to just a lack of experience at times.
That's certainly true, but I don't see how experience comes into losing, giving up 3 goals to draw a game. Like, I know, obviously, the opponent gave up 3 goals in the first half when we're talking about that at long game, but there has to be... Longford Town weren't without players that have like played the game before, if you know what I mean. Like, that's, it's just not possible to do that, and that's an anomaly. But you know, for that mightn't happen to a team once in 5 years, but Longford Town threw away a few leads this season, and that is really, you know, that they're gut punches that you take, and then when you're trying to pull yourself out of a situation, you probably try and do too much, or you know, you make that little extra mistake because you're a bit nervous because of what happened the week before. And, you know, the Longford Town are getting punished for all of these. I was thinking Longford Town aren't having a bag of luck lately. Like, even if you think about that Wexford game that Longford Town managed to come back from 2-2 or from 2-0 down, they missed a penalty in the first half that would have been just before half time, which would have kind of set them up.
But then the recent one where 2-0 up with 6 minutes to go and they end up drawing 2-2 again,
but that's just the story of the season for Longford Town. And yeah, we're giving them an easier goal, but like, they're also bottom of the first division, you know what, there's not really much else to say. We're just providing a bit of context on it because we're looking at it every week. There's also like probably 6 or 7 of them A players that they would have been starting that game that night. Is the other thing. Like, a couple of times this season, Longford Town had maybe 5 or 6 subs and 2 keepers on the bench.
Yeah.
So I think if that spells the picture for you, whoever asked that question,
Craig,
I hope that answers it somewhat.
Yeah. The other team we promised we'd come back to, Wexford, no wins in their last 5, 4 points outside the playoff places.
Oh, it's mental how they're only 4 points outside.
Yeah, I suppose like I think everyone expected them to be in the top 3 this season. They're only 9 points behind UCD, who are second, and they have a game in hand. So it's not panic stations just yet. But as we said on our most recent show, if they don't pick up in the second half of the season and they don't finish in the top 5, it would be an absolute disaster, a complete failure of a season for Wexford, given the caliber of player they've brought in over the last few seasons.
That's right. We weren't at all satisfied with their performance. You know, at this point, 12 months ago, they managed to pull it out of fire in the second half of the season. I was extremely disappointed with their performance on the bank holiday against Longford Town. I know they managed to dig it out with 2 goals towards the end of the game. But yeah, they were brutal. Like, they were outplayed for the majority of that game by Longford Town.
I think we've been ultra critical of Bray for their defending. And they've conceded more goals than Bray. They've conceded more goals than any team in the top 6, in the top 5. They've conceded 2 goals less than Cove. They've only conceded 7 goals more than Longford, and they've played a game less. So
they've conceded 7 goals less, you mean?
Seven goals less than Offaly. Sorry, yeah, and they've played a game less. Like that's atrocious.
It's
record now. You can probably put a good four or five of them down to the goalkeeper at times. But
well, four or five, I'd say you're probably reaching double digits nearly at this point.
Yeah,
like the gaffes from the keeper like have cost them so many times, and like definitely dropped a heap of points because of it. But like there's definitely players in that back line that I do not rate at all. I've been saying it for a long time. That they just seem to be starters every week. It's baffling to me. I just don't understand. Like even talking with my friend down at the Wexford game, you didn't bother your arse that day. Probably Dundalk were playing somewhere, so you went to that instead. But I didn't. I wasn't surprised about how poor Wexford were at the back. It doesn't seem to have changed very much since last year. So, look, they have a big job on in the second half of the season to get a bit of form going and shore up that defence. It'll be interesting to see what they do with the keeping situation again.
I suppose just to put a cap on the First Division situation, Cork City, there's been a bit of discontent down there, I think, up until just before the break when they put together back-to-back wins. One of those against Longford, although they were very poor in the first half against Longford, and then Longford gifted them a couple of goals. But
yeah,
not the first time we've said that this season, but they were obviously much better against Cove last time. But look, there's nobody out there that doesn't think Cork City will win the division. UCD have had a cracking start to the season to be second. Bray have really gathered it up in recent weeks. Be interesting to see what they do in terms of the managerial or head coach situation there. Athlone, I think, have been very consistent compared to normal standards. They're fourth in the table. Finn Harps, they've obviously dropped off a bit, but if they got in the playoffs, they'd be very happy with that. We've talked about Wexford. Cove are still in the mix. I think they'd be more than happy with that. Even Treaty are only 6 points off the playoffs. Those 9 points they gathered up at the start of the year, as you said, it could be very, very important come the end of it. Kerry, we got a few questions, I think, in the mailbag in the hotline about Kerry and their improvement. 18 points on the board. They only got, 10 all of last season. So they're having a really, really good first half of the season. They'll hope to back that up in the second half of the season. And we talked about Longford in depth as well. So is there any final words you want to add on the First Division before we move to the hotline?
How many points are Longford Town off the playoffs?
Longford Town are 17 points off the playoffs.
Is it doable?
No.
Okay. Do you think just the final
question? No, I will say this. If we can manage to sign Davey O'Sullivan and Gary Shaw back, we'll win the league in the second half of the season. Those two men would still be the top goal scorers if they were playing today. It's incredible how good they still are and how fit they still are. Dave Sully, I couldn't believe on Saturday. He's slimmer now than he was playing for Longford.
Oh, Jesus. Well, he wasn't a tubby lad either.
No, he was always in outrageous shape, but he's even leaner now. And he's still playing a bit of ball for some club, local club in Wicklow. He actually had a final on Sunday now. I believe the result went against them. But he got two goals in the Legends match. Gary Shaw would have got at least a couple of goals only for young Jack Harrington was filling in goals for the United Legends and made a couple of brilliant saves. Well done to him. It was a great experience for him. But Shaw and Sully, if they were still on the go now, they'd be the top scorers in the division and easily, which is probably a bit of an indictment on the division.
Yeah, SOS back at it again.
Yeah.
Jesus, what a time that was. Oh, God. Yeah, look, I think the genuine question I was going to ask you, will from what you've seen in recent times over with Bray since Ian Ryan left, do you think they'll be able to maintain that going forward, or like, would you be nearly afraid of bringing in a manager at this point? Upset that?
I'm not actually sure who's taking charge there at the minute. Everything's a bit hush hush.
Shock heart.
Yeah, I don't really know. My fear with them is that they'll always self implode. So I think I've said from very early on the season, UCD look second best of the rest for me. So
yeah, 100%.
I think Cork win it. UCD second. I think Athlone might be able to.
I think they're very inconsistent.
You think they're inconsistent, Athlone?
Yeah, but
they're far more consistent than I expected them to be this season.
Are they?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, they went on such a bad run, and then they've kind of put that to the side.
Only one win in five before the break, but they drew three of them games, so like they're not losing that many matches.
That's true. That's actually
five,
true,
five losses from 20. Like I think they've been quite consistent. Even their goal difference, 26 scored, 26 conceded. It's usually something like 40 scored and, you know, 55 conceded or something when it comes that lone. So
yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah, I think Finn Harps, I think that they're in a battle to squeeze into the playoffs. Wexford might gather it together. I'm not so sure. I think there probably won't be that much change in the table between now and the end of the year.
Fair enough. Well, apart from Longford Town up to fourth.
When they get Shaw and Sully back. Yeah. Right, let's go to the BTS hotline before we go. Sam, Waterford and Galway have done excellently well, especially Waterford, although he points out he is biased. We came up via the playoffs. We're now fourth with a strong case for Europe. Seems as though all the headlines, though, are about Shells and Kenny at Pats. Understandable enough, he says.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm on the record saying that, like, most of the media, sports or soccer media, is welded to Duffer's arse. So, if he decides to say something, let's get 40 articles about it. Like, there's no... But also, like, I don't think there has there ever been really, you know, much fanfare or watching or looking about teams outside of that. Maybe, you know, you'd have a few bits of commentary around about Bows, but I wouldn't be looking too deeply into that myself.
It probably has been overlooked, like how far Waterford were behind Galway last season, and now they're neck and neck with them. And as I said to Shane Keegan earlier on, Waterford are one of the we've been critical of a lot of the teams in the league that they're boring to watch this season. Waterford are a team that I would actually happily go and watch. I think they play a really good brand of football, and they've got players like Asamoah and Podjamin scoring goals as well. Someone points out that Podjamin has been the signing of the season. It's probably hard to argue with that. But one thing I do want to ask you, on the last pod we did, I think one of the very last questions in the hotline was about, will this be the year that fourth isn't enough for Europe? And I made the case for a number of teams like Waterford, Galway, Dundalk, that could go on cup runs. And you kind of dismissed it, said, no, it'll be the old guard that'll win it. But then a few days later, we had the first of the second round cup draw. We got the Dublin Derby. We got the Loud Derby.
Oh, yes.
We got Pat's Derry. We got some absolute ding-dong cup ties, which could really, really open it up for teams like Waterford and Galway. So I ask you again, could this be the season fourth isn't enough for Europe? It'd just be a real shame, especially for someone like Waterford, who have finished fourth before and had it cruelly taken away from them due to technical issues as such. It'd be a real shame.
In one way, but go on.
It'd be a real shame if they finish fourth this year. It's the year that, probably first time in what, 10 years or more, that one of the top three don't win the cup.
I definitely looking at the draw has totally, not totally changed it, but like there's going to be a few exits here. I think obviously the draw of the round is definitely Bows and Rovers. Pats and Derry, you said, was the other one?
Yeah.
Major one. Yeah, like, they're two teams that have a very strong recent history in the...
Last two winners.
In the FAI Cup. So, I think then losing one of them so early on is going to be a difference maker. And then, you know, there might be another big draw where, I don't know, one of those teams meet the winner of Bows and Shamrock Rovers, for example, and then another one falls.
Yeah.
So it is possible based on the draw, but I think it's probably a bit early to say at this point. Maybe a third in the third round.
Who do you think finishes fourth, by the way?
Galway.
You don't think Pats will gather it up?
No. Hmm. Well, I don't go over just too consistent. Like, someone else made the point of if earlier on that if Gorman managed to find a lad that could boot it into the net, you know, that's all they're really missing. I know they spend a lot of their time defending and not conceding, which is great. So I don't know who you might have to get messy in at Galway to be able to make that difference. But I'm not really sure if they're just not losing enough of games. And I think that's going to be a difference maker come the end of the season for this one.
Git wants to know who's going down, who's heading for the playoff, who wins the cup.
Drogheda for the playoff, Sligo going down.
Ooh. The cup.
I've nearly wanted to say Shamrock Rovers get it together this year, but I don't see it. Why not Waterford?
Waterford, fair enough. I was going to say I'll give you two. I think who's going down between Drogheda and Sligo for me. So there, one of them will either go down or be in the playoff. And who wins the cup? I'll give myself two here. I'm going to go. I'll give myself three here. Three out of the 20 league clubs. I go Galway, Waterford, or Dundalk for the cup. I do think it'll be an outsider that wins the cup this year.
Dundalk.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Okay. Yeah. Whatever, man.
Now we have quite a few in the hotline here, so we'll try and get through these as much as we can. Jack, he makes comments about, I think, the referee. Is he a Waterford fan? Not sure. I think he's a Waterford fan. Just again about that offside decision. Very unhappy with that. Billy Dorney, just pointing out that Greg Bulger and Sean Murray have been admitted from some sort of team of the season. I'm not sure who put that together. It wasn't us anyway. He said whoever admitted them needs guide dogs. Fair enough. Brian, are Bo's players really that bad? I think we've pointed out that no matter who was in charge of that Bo's team, where they are now is kind of where we expected them to be. Up, down, in between. It's not a great group of players.
No, it's not. No, I don't think there's enough quality in that at all. I don't think that's too surprising either. Like, we're looking at players that haven't, you know, they're just probably not good enough for the team. And then you add in that, like, lax approach and no, I don't know, like, there never seemed to be any much of a fight in a lot of games. Like you're walking out, or you're looking at players walking off the pitch and it's just been like, what happened here? Like, how did this happen? Type of idea. And they didn't, the game passed them by, while also losing. So maybe did we think that Alan Reynolds would have a bit more of an impact? Like, I think Bowes were up to third at one point earlier, you know, after he came in. So it's kind of really hard to know, but I think a team that's so inconsistent shows that the players just aren't at it.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of the proof of it.
Yeah. Jamie Ryan, again, a similar question about Waterford and Galway, the great start. Who do we think will get fourth? Opinion on the playoff and relegation spot, and can Shells do? I think we've covered all of that. Anna just asked about Kerry's improvement. Just a quick word on that, Gary.
Yeah, well, look, it was always going to be an improvement over the, like, and we fully expected it. Like, I think I said, like, will they get five goal wins this season? They've already gotten two against Longford and they bet someone else.
Yeah, they're up to four wins now.
Yeah, so they'll probably gather up another win.
What's probably most impressive nearly is their improved defensive displays. They're only on -7. They've better goal difference than Longford and Cove. They've only conceded 26 and 21. Like, I'd love to look back and see how many was last season. It was probably near 50, I'd say, or beyond at this stage of the season.
Oh, it was, yeah. I think near 100 come the end of the season.
Definitely more put together, more organised, and a lot hardier.
100%. I think there seems to be more drilled, and the training seems to have more of an impact than what we saw last season. So, good improvement there.
Finally, Brian Doherty, who's a Derry fan, says, are Rovers in a fight for a European place?
I don't think so.
I think they'll be okay.
I think they'll be 100%, yeah.
Yeah. So, look, that's the mid-season review. Hope you've all enjoyed that. We'll be back next week to preview the return of the league. Is it Thursday games next week? Or we have another set of Thursday games coming up, I think, haven't we? We
just have a look. Do we?
Maybe they're the week after. Yeah, there is another set of Thursday games coming somewhere along the line. It could be the week after.
Why is that?
I think because it's clashing with the... Yeah, so we return next week, Friday, the 28th with matches, and then the following week there's Thursday matches because it's clashing with, I think, the quarters of the Euros or something along those lines.
Oh, so the 4th of July, is it?
4th of July, we have, yeah, games, yeah.
America!
Yep.
Yeah, no, that's is that Thursday? Jesus, right. Right, okay, there we go.
Yep, so we'll be back next week to preview the return of the league after the summer break. A quick word on the Euros, have you watched much of it yet?
Yeah, no, I've watched a good bit of it. I didn't see much of the weekend. But, yeah, no, I did see...
you see Turkey and Georgia today?
No,
game of the tournament.
Yeah, I heard that. Unfortunately, I was doing my job.
what are you doing that for?
Stop. I'd ask myself the same thing every day. So does my boss.
who's going to win it?
I don't... Well, firstly, I actually don't care. you were had a emotional tweet up last week. Oh, it's awful, Ireland aren't in it. And I was actually saying that to someone recently. No, she wouldn't be a big football fan at all. You know, I was just like, I can't believe I have to explain like how much different the country would be right now if Ireland were at the Euros. And I was thinking about that when that Thierry Henry handball situation, and like some egot said to me, what'd she say? Oh, it's only a game.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, God.
Well, not to self-combust there.
Would you stop? So, yeah, it is probably a bit more painful. Like, you're looking at, you know, particularly us egots that go around all these away games. Like, you wouldn't have been in Greece last week. You would be thinking about getting ready to go to Germany.
Mm.
And I think that's probably a bit of a regretful feeling. But look, it's great to have all the football on all the time on the telly. And yeah, I don't really care who wins. I wouldn't have no particular grow for any of them. Any preference yourself?
No preference for who wins it. It looks open enough. Like, I think from across watching most of the first round matches, I don't think anyone really stood out. A lot of people have said how impressed they were with Germany, but hard to read too much into it against Scotland. I had a bit of a fan after watching Portugal last week against Ireland. Had a bit of a fancy for them. They weren't great this evening.
No, they were very poor. I found
similar comments would apply to the likes of France and England. But I have to just say before we go, it's gas. Like, Southgate getting absolutely slated for England's performance. Yeah, I've been watching BBC tonight, and they're going on, oh, you know, fair play to Portugal tonight, you know, up against a tough team, and they got the job done, and they pretty much used similar comments for all the other matches apart from England. Like, they really don't help themselves to try and win these things. So
yeah, it is a complete bubble. Like,
it's a long tournament. You don't need to play well in every game. There'll be no team that'll... It's very rare that a team wins every game at a major competition. So.
Speaking of which, didn't Argentina lose to Saudi Arabia
recently? Exactly.
Shinny.
Yeah. Right, well, that's enough non-League of Ireland talk. I get a bit uncomfortable when we move away from the league for too long. So, look, that was the mid-season review. Thanks to Gary for joining me. Thanks to all of our listeners for tuning in, to our sponsor, Quint AV, and of course to Shane Keegan for joining us on the show. We'll be back next week to preview the return of the league, but until then, enjoy the summer break, enjoy the Euros, and we'll speak to you soon.
Thanks for listening. Check out betweenthestripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.